The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and the title of this segment is called Ebony. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Marquita Bradshaw and Her Fight for Environmental Justice. Marquita Bradshaw knows firsthand what is at stake if people do not have access to healthy and safe communities where they live, learn, work, worship, and recreate, as she puts it. The Tennessee native who grew up in South Memphis, where everything was within walking distance, including the Memphis Defense Depot, which was later classified as a National Priority List Superfund site, a location filled with toxic waste. In the early 1990s, her grandmother would die of cancer, as would other members of her community. A lot of people were sick too, and still are sick. That is what got me involved beyond voting, Bradshaw told Essence. And the point where it really got me activated is when we became aware that it was having an effect on children, 13 and 14-year-olds with ovarian and uterine cancer, 17, 18-year-olds with prostate and testicular cancer. Bradshaw launched into a world of activism, founding the organization Youth Terminating Pollution to raise more awareness to the environmental issues in the community, and from there, continuing to just knock from door to door until, as she puts it, it became a career. I became an international labor organizer and also community organizer for many nonprofits, getting people engaged and involved in a political process, she said. Now she's only delving deeper, this time setting her eyes on enacting change in the United States Senate with the hopes of filling the seat that will be left empty after Senator Lamar Alexander finishes up his current term after declining to seek re-election. Of course, Bradshaw will have to beat out four other Democrats in the upcoming August 6th primary elections in the state, but she remains confident in the passion of her fight. I want to make sure that hardworking people have healthy and safe communities where they live, learn, work, worship, and recreate, Bradshaw told Essence. We do that with three foundational pillars: an environment with a transition away from pollution, an economy that works for hardworking people, and a high-quality educational system that prepares our students for success. Bradshaw made it clear that while the environment is one of her top priorities, her battle for true environmental justice goes much further and deeper than protecting the places where people live. You have your social, your economic, your political, and your medical environment. And that's what environmental justice is. It is a comprehensive way to look at policy, she pointed out. Bradshaw is a supporter of Medicare for All, noting that she doesn't want her constituents to go bankrupt like she did just because of their health care plan. And good health care is tied into her environmental plan regardless, because as she succinctly put it, people's health is tied to environmental health. Education is another big issue for the candidate, who believes in a fully funded, high-quality public education. And again, to link it back to her passion for the environment, providing quality education to children also includes providing a quality environment for them to learn in. When children grow up in polluted communities, it robs them of developmental skills, Bradshaw said, noting that pollutants like lead present in the water in Tennessee, which then finds its way into homes and schools. Lead is one of those things we saw in Flint, Michigan, and how devastating it was in the learning process. It is something that we have to be concerned about with our children. We have to eliminate the exposure that they can possibly have for pollution, because it robs them of key developmental skills and causes learning disabilities and abnormalities that can be avoided. The first time politician is impassioned and inspired by women like her mother, Doris Bradshaw, who formed the Defense Depot Memphis, Tennessee Concerned Citizen Committee to deal with the issue of the Superfund site. And many of the women that were part of the freshman class of the 116th Congress, such as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And she truly believes, as someone who made it a point to connect with voters, that she can deliver what the people need. There is a pathway for victory by being true to what was happening, to the issues, and working hard to serve people across Tennessee and the issues that they are experiencing by listening to them first, Bradshaw noted, adding that listening was a key part of her campaigning strategy. I've been surveying people all across the state to find out what issues are most important to them since I declared my candidacy. I've been listening to people wanting to know what the issues are that's motivating people to vote, she added. And by collecting those answers, because I am an organizer at heart, to be able to have an agenda based on what people want in the state of Tennessee. The next article is titled, Mary Blackford is bringing healthy food options to Black communities in Washington, D.C. Access to quality food is recently becoming a consistent part of the conversation in discussions about empowering underserved communities. Too often, Black and Brown communities are left to make do with failing subpar grocery stores and fast food. And as a result, poor health ensues. Enter Mary Blackford, the Pine Sol in Essence Build Your Legacy Contest Grand Prize winner and founder of Market 7, a community marketplace that features Black-owned businesses in Washington, D.C., designed to alleviate food and retail deserts in Ward 7. Her focus has always been on community since she was 16 years old and won her first grant toward entrepreneurship. When I was in high school, I was in a program called the Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship, and it was a program that was partnered with our high school that provided curriculum for high school students as well as middle school students as well to start businesses. Blackford reminisces with Unbossed host Marquita Harris. I was hooked from the first day because I felt how dynamic it was to actually create something. I grew up very humbly, and so that income was very transformational in my life. I looked around in my community at the time, and I was like, if we all could do this, what a difference it could be. The trajectory eventually led Blackford to create Market 7 because she recognized a deep need in her community, a need that was causing Black people to suffer with diseases like diabetes and die at alarmingly high rates. Her work with Market 7, she says, sits at the intersection of sustainable health and sustainable economics. I worked very diligently with community partners to make sure that we are actually working with Black businesses, in particular because Black businesses don't get so much access, says Black Ford. The Pine Sol, in essence, Build Your Legacy contest, which Cassandra Lewis, brand manager of Pine Sol, and Shante Mears Watkins, VP of marketing for Clorox, were instrumental in bringing to life, offers a grand prize of $150,000, which Black Ford is allotting to the furtherance of Market 7's mission and to help build up her community from the inside out. Part of her plan is already underway as she and her team break ground on a food hall that will showcase foods from across the diaspora from a variety of local vendors. We are building this from the ground. Any investment of any kind, a grant of any kind in Market 7, you are investing in a team of 60 Black-owned businesses in the Washington, D.C. area. So it's not just me. It's several of us, says Black Ford. The next article is titled, Raising Capital While Black and a Woman. In the ever-competitive industry of venture capitalism, it's a widely known fact that this world is chock-full of white guys. Black women founders receive less than 1% of VC funding, and to make matters worse, many of those investors see no cause for alarm. This is just one of the reasons why entrepreneur Savitri Wilson is such an anomaly. Just as COVID-19 began its destructive course throughout the U.S. and our communities, Wilson raised $8 million in Series A funding for her company, Resilia. We closed funding at the onset of COVID-19 when you felt it. I felt the walls closing in, Wilson said. Resilia is a software as a service platform with a mission to harness the power of generosity, technology, and human connection to make nonprofit leadership available for everyone. In a nutshell, through Resilia, nonprofits are provided the support needed to thrive. I could have stayed out and brought on additional investors for $2 million more, but I was just tired and COVID-19 was hitting, Wilson says about hitting that home stretch. This $8 million feat is the highest venture capital raise by a female founded tech company in the state of Louisiana, and as Wilson mentioned, the funding climate compounded by the onset of COVID-19, she could have continued further. Little is often discussed about the arduous process of raising capital while Black, an undertaking rendered even more challenging when you're also a Black woman. Unsurprisingly, the amount of energy and effort exerted for Black women to raise a fraction of what white men can often raise in less time is exponentially higher. Typically, just to raise about $5 million, it may take about 300 meetings for somebody who's Black, and out here raising, that's just the reality, explained Fearless Fund co-founder Ariane Simone to Essence recently. She further noted that someone who is white may also only need 20 meetings to raise even more capital. Even convincing investors that this is a major problem presents yet another hurdle. A 2018 Morgan Stanley survey revealed that out of 101 investors, nearly 60% believed that women and minority-owned businesses received the correct amount of capital. Even worse, 20% believed the same groups received more than they deserved. 81% of VC funds have no Black investors, according to a Rate My Investor and Diversity VC study. Despite industry odds, Wilson has leaped from obstacle to obstacle with aplomb. In 2018, she made headlines for being one of 33 Black women who raised more than $1 million in funding for her company, Exempt Me Now, an online platform that simplifies the process of creating and maintaining a nonprofit. But that said, this recent journey was far from easy. It took me roughly about 4 or 5 months to raise a Series A, and that was basically setting up meetings, Wilson says. We had one investor that we thought was probably going to be a significant lead over time to decide who was going to lead our round. They came out to New Orleans, wined and dined us, and later they were like, oh, we're going to pass. I was like, what? Thankfully, Wilson wasn't soured by the experience. After all, situations like these are commonplace in the off-fickle world of VC investors. According to a recent Rate My Investor and Diversity VC Study 81, according to a recent Rate My Investor and Diversity VC Study, 81% of VC funds have no Black investors. However, one has to consider what would the founder landscape look like if there were more Black faces winning and dining prospective candidates. When asked about the important advice she had for Black women raising capital, Wilson explained that due diligence, that rigorous vetting process where investors are intensely evaluating whether or not your company is worthy of their investment can be the most make it or break it moment for Black women founders. Being able to go through the diligence of raising capital is one of the biggest hurdles, but you can get over that hurdle, she says. It starts with having the appropriate data for your finances, products, market research, and beyond. Basically, stay ready. These are the key next things that you have to get through to get to the other side of that funding. Despite Wilson's big win, the Resilia founder isn't resting on her laurels. She's passionate about spreading the wealth and is working on an ebook to help fellow entrepreneurs achieve what she has. I thought, how could I use my talents to continue to help other businesses and nonprofits that are suffering during this time, she says. And so that was something that I feel most happy about. It's literally just taking people step by step through how I raised from the first 100,000 to the first 2 million, now 8 million. The next article is titled, WeTV Cuts Ties with Tamar Braxton After Singer's Hospitalization. One day after Tamar Braxton opened up about her harrowing experience as a reality star, the network set to air her latest reality TV show wants to, quote unquote, honor her request and let her out of her contract. In a statement to Essence, WeTV said, Tamar Braxton has been an important part of our network family for more than a decade. As she focuses on her health and recovery at what is clearly a difficult and personal time, we will work with her representatives to honor her request to end all future work for the network. We wish her nothing but the best. Variety was the first to report the split. The news comes after Braxton took to Instagram, posting a lengthy statement saying that in regards to working in reality TV, she has been betrayed, taken advantage of, overworked, and underpaid. WeTV noted that Braxton is the second highest paid reality star on their network behind her sister Toni. Braxton went to explain on Instagram that a career in reality television contributed greatly to her unhappiness. Over the past 11 years, there were promises made to protect and portray my story with the authenticity and honestly I gave, she wrote Thursday. I wrote a letter over 2 months ago asking to be freed from what I believed was excessive and unfair. The Grammy-nominated singer added in the statement, I explained in personal detail the demise I was experiencing. My cry for help went totally ignored. However, demands persisted. Fans first fell in love with the youngest Braxton singer when she debuted on WeTV's Braxton Family Values. Braxton later starred in the spinoff Tamar and Vince with her ex-husband, Vincent Hubert. She's also appeared on Celebrity Big Brother, winning last year, and currently stars in VH1's To Catch a Beautician. Braxton was hospitalized shortly before what would have been the premiere of her second WeTV spinoff, Get Your Life, which is pushed back until September 10th. WeTV said they still plan to air the season. The next article is titled, Top 5 Tech Essentials Every Student Needs. Gear up because your family is about to ace school. Whether your kids are returning to the classroom, we have got a list of the hottest tech items from Walmart to help them ace the school year and make it their best one yet. You'll love how the prices are too. Laptop, knock out any assignment with this Lenovo IdeaPad 3. This 15-inch laptop is packed with the latest specs, designed with long-lasting performance in mind, and doesn't cost a fortune. Beyond being fast, its Dolby audio sounds amazing. The display is visually stunning, but what really stands out is the webcam shutter. When your child is done with their video chat, they simply close the shutter, making the webcam hacker-proof. Headphones, made for remote learning and homework. Headphones are the most must-have for back to school. And this year, go for a wireless Bluetooth pair like these from On. They are fun, great looking, and only $14.88. Printer, go wireless with an all-in-one printer to create awesome, high-quality school projects and presentations in full color. And what's really cool is that you can easily print from smartphones and tablets, making it easier than ever to get and stay organized. Monitor, bring home into the now with the crisp, clean HDMI monitor like this one from 32-inch, one from On. This awesome display delivers excellent detail for multimedia homework assignments, while the tilt angle easily adjusts the screen position so they can see clearly without craning their neck. Plus, it is a great way for them to maintain proper posture while doing their schoolwork. Tablet, update your tablet this year so you can download the latest tools and educational platforms while being able to video chat with teachers, then use the camera and editing apps to create school projects that will really wow and even have some fun doing them. Every item on this list is from Walmart and available for you to shop the way you want. Fast, free 2-day delivery or curbside pickup. And get ready to rule the school. The next article is titled, Four Black Women Suffering Domestic Abuse, Coronavirus Quarantines Are Life-Threatening. Social isolation may be a drag for you, but for some sisters, it's literally putting their lives in danger. Domestic violence resource centers across the country are anticipating an uptick in intimate partner violence in the wake of COVID-19. Under the ordinary circumstances, domestic violence is more prevalent among Black women than white, Latina, or Asian women, according to statistics from the Institute for Women's Policy Research. 4 in 10 Black women experience physical abuse. We're also more likely to endure psychological abuse, such as humiliation, bullying, name-calling, coercion, and control. Now add the effects of COVID-19 outbreak, which has families under possible financial strain, living quarantined in close quarters, and in a stressful situation. It is a formula that puts sisters at an even greater risk of physical, emotional, or financial abuse. For example, if a woman's work hours have been shortened or she loses her job because of COVID-19 closings, she may be more dependent on her partner for financial support for herself or her children. That may put her at the economic mercy of her abuser, and without the ability to collect the coins she needs to make an escape. Unfortunately, there's a shortage of targeted, culturally specific services for Black survivors of domestic and sexual violence, according to the National Center on Violence Against Women in the Black Community. It's important for counselors to understand the cultural choices Black women make as they decide how best to address their situation. A University of Buffalo study found that Black women may rely on support from family and friends, use church as a resource, or even physically fight back. We also tend to avoid encounters with law enforcement because we know that can go bad very quickly. We have run out of time for today's episode of Ebony. We hope you have enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Ebony is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or concerns, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time.